In Brazil, senators have approved a report calling for President Bolsonaro to be indicted for crimes against humanity relating to his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as charges of incitement to crime, falsification of documents, among others. Meanwhile, as the Pope urges leaders to take radical climate action at next week's Global Environmental Summit, COP26, will the leader of the world's most populous Catholic country change his ways? Professor Idelbar Avelar teaches Latin American studies at Tulane University in New Orleans. He's just published a book on Bolsonarismo, which I haven't read because it's in Portuguese. Professor Avelar, hola.
Hola, Kim. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Very nice to talk to you again.
Good morning to your listeners in New Zealand. Nice to talk to you again.
What are the chances of President Bolsonaro being indicted for these crimes?
Well, these charges that have been directed against him by the Senate Investigative Commission have to be taken up by the public prosecutor in charge, who would be the responsible party. The crux of the matter is that Bolsonaro has been able to install a loyalist in the public prosecutor's office, and he still counts on the support of about 25% of the country, which gives him enough political leverage to make an immediate indictment doubtful at best. There's also hope amongst activists that he could be indicted in the International Tribunal in The Hague. So that is another hope. But I would not hold my breath. Brazil has presidential elections scheduled for October of next year. And there are a number of political forces, including political forces that are in the opposition to Bolsonaro, who do not have any interest in rocking the boat too much at this point, because the polls are telling us that Lula has a very healthy lead. Lula, who was in prison the last time we spoke, Kim, Lula has now a 44% lead in the polls. Brazilian presidential elections are held in two different moments. If a candidate does not reach 50% of the first round, there is a runoff with the two better voted candidates. And in the simulation of this runoff, Lula leads Bolsonaro by 14 points. So it is not in the interests of the main opposition force to take these things to the streets and to force an indictment right away. There would have to be significant popular pressure to get the public prosecutor, the federal public prosecutor, his name is Augusto Aras, and he's a Bolsonaro loyalist. So the work of the Senate Investigative Commission was laudable. It was excellent work indeed. The report is 1,100 pages long, and it details a series of crimes that could be characterized as crimes against humanity. But I find it doubtful that we will see an indictment coming up anytime soon.
Do you mean that if Lula's supporters forced the issue, then they are worried that Bolsonaro supporters will gain traction? Is that why you say they don't want to force the issue right now?
They don't want to force the issue because if you oust Bolsonaro at the moment, you no longer have that card to play in the elections, right? The vice president would take over, and then the main selling point for the Lula ticket next year would be gone because Bolsonaro would be gone. There is a mutual reinforcement of these two political blocks in Brazil. They are antagonistic, obviously, but they also need each other in many ways. In the election that is supposed to be held next year, we don't even know if there's going to be an election at this point because we have a fascist in power and he's constantly threatening the elections. The best wager on the Workers' Party bloc is to wait, because after all, we're leading, right? So if we're leading in the polls, if we have such a healthy lead, the best that we can do is just to let Bolsonaro bleed a little more and win the elections in October. There is significant support for impeachment proceedings against Bolsonaro in the Brazilian population, but that support comes primarily from citizens who are not politically organized. So that is the sort of mutual reinforcement that informs the situation.
We can look more closely at your description of Bolsonaro as a fascist in a moment, but let's go back to Lula. He was president for two terms. He, as you said, is out of prison now. He's had his corruption convictions quashed, and is expected to run again, obviously. How did his convictions become quashed? Does he still not have corruption cloud hanging over him?
Well, as always with juridical matters in politics, what ultimately matters is the political clash of forces, right? What happened, I think the more interesting discussion is not whether or not Lula is corrupt. The more interesting discussion is what happened with the political structure in the country, with the political relation of forces that made it possible for the Supreme Court to overturn those convictions. The last time we spoke, I was looking at my records here. The last time we spoke was April 2018. At that moment, the most popular political figure in Brazil was Judge Sergio Moro. Since then, Judge Sergio Moro being the judge responsible for Lula's conviction. Since then, recordings have appeared that showed Sergio Moro basically working in collaboration with the prosecution, making fun of the defense, hiding documents from the Supreme Court, and basically engaging in practices that can also be characterized as corrupt. To make matters worse for him, he accepted to be the justice minister of Bolsonaro. And therefore, he wasted the great political capital of the Operation Car Wash, which was the perception that it was a nonpartisan enterprise, right? That it was targeting corrupt politicians from all over the spectrum. In late 2018, he accepted an invitation from Bolsonaro to become a minister of state in Bolsonaro's administration. That was immediately perceived by political analysts, myself included, as a great mistake on his part, because as a judge, he had stability in his job. He could not be fired. He was an extremely popular figure. And he could later on become a key player in political maneuvers in the country. In order to become a minister of state, he had to renounce his position as a judge. And he joined an administration over which he had very little control. It's a far-right coalition in which his own anti-corruption discourse was only a sort of electoral piece. He did not have autonomy to do anything, and he was repeatedly humiliated by Bolsonaro. And the straw that broke the camel's back was Bolsonaro's demand that he changed the head of the federal police in the state of Rio, because Bolsonaro's children are under investigation, not only for corruption, but also for participation in much more serious crimes like murder. at that point, he had to resign, and that political capital that he had accumulated was totally squandered. At that point, Temer's government had become very unpopular as well, and the Workers' Party insistence that Lula was in fact innocent gained a lot of traction. When that insistence gained a lot of traction, an opening happened in the Supreme Court that allowed the Supreme Court justices who were closer to Lula to win a vote and overturn the convictions that had happened before.
Right. Let's talk about the definition of fascist. You're obviously in no doubt that Bolsonaro is a fascist. Far right, authoritarian, dictator, forcible suppression of opposition. I'm reading out the definition here. Regimentation of society and the economy. Does he fit all those categories?
I wouldn't call him a dictator because Brazil is still a functioning democracy, right? He is a would-be dictator. He would love to be a dictator. That is his explicit project. In fact, throughout the 1990s and the 2000s, when he was a state representative in Brazilian Congress, one of the most repeated statements coming from Bolsonaro was that the Brazilian dictatorship of 1964-1985 had not killed enough people, that in order to succeed, we would have to kill about 30,000 people more. There's considerable debate in Brazilian social sciences about whether or not the term fascist applies. I tend to think that it is that the Bolsonaro coalition is significantly different from classical fascism, but it keeps some of the most important characteristics of fascism, namely this constant mobilization of a sector of society around the tropes of violence, extermination, and elimination of political adversaries. The constant resort to militarism as a major organizing image for their discourses, and the constant recourse to militarism as a tactic, and the constant threat of violence, the constant threat of overturning democratic institutions in order to establish an authoritarian regime. So call it fascist or not, those characteristics are present there. Certainly a far-right coalition. I mean, newspapers around the world have agreed. That's how The Guardian calls him. That's how the New York Times calls him. And authoritarian certainly applies. He is somebody who is not very comfortable in a democratic setting.
So on the COVID front, over 600,000 people have died of COVID in Brazil. On the environmental front, President Bolsonaro's enemies would call crimes against the environment encouraging deforestation in the Amazon. Are they likely to be addressed at COP26? His representative is the environment minister, and he said that since April, they've changed tack and are now combating deforestation. What happened in April, and is that true?
No, it's not true at all. I mean, what one of the characteristics of Bolsonarismo is the constant rewriting of something that they had said before, the constant production of false statements that are contradictory with things that they already, that they themselves said in a previous moment. That happens on purpose. I mean, it's the strategy of the internet troll, right? Who is constantly throwing falsehoods at you so that you have to unpack those falsehoods, to demonstrate that they're false. And while you are engaged in doing that, they are throwing, you know, another 10 falsehoods at you so that you're exhausted by the end of the conversation. It's a discursive strategy that Bolsonaro learned in part from Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump repeatedly disseminated falsehoods about vaccines, that vaccines caused autism, that vaccine. Just the other day, Bolsonaro, in one of his live broadcasts, said that vaccines cause HIV. The arguments about the Amazon are false. The deforestation has increased exponentially under Bolsonaro. It has increased to the point of hurting business, to hurting the cattle business, which traditionally has been one of the forces that drive deforestation in the Amazon. We have reached this bizarre situation where the Ministry of the Environment, which traditionally stands in tension with the Ministry of Agriculture, because, you know, agribusiness wants to expand the agricultural frontier. And in Brazil, you expand the agricultural frontier by coming from the south into the north and cutting trees and leading cattle to areas in the Amazon where cattle had not been before. We have reached a point where that opposition no longer exists because the Ministry of the Environment in the Bolsonaro administration is even more anti-environment than the Ministry of Agriculture, who has to maintain some semblance of moderation in this issue. Otherwise, business will be hurt. So Brazilian exports to China, which represent a significant chunk of the Brazilian GDP, have been hurt, not only because of the racist statements made by the Bolsonaro family against the Chinese, but also because at the moment, Brazil is not even pretending to care. The Brazilian administration today is not even pretending to regulate and control deforestation. It is allied with the forces of deforestation, including the gold miners.
As I mentioned, Brazil is the most populous Catholic country in the world. Do they hear the Pope and think Bolsonaro must be a bad guy if the Pope is saying this? How does it work?
It works in very interesting ways. Thank you for that question, because it allows me to add a couple of pieces of information that complement what you said. Yes, Brazil continues to be the largest Catholic country in the world, but it is also one of the countries that, in proportional terms, Catholicism has been losing the most ground, right? The evangelical population of Brazil has grown exponentially in the past 30 years. It has gone from about 11% in the early 90s to 22% in the late 90s. And then at this point, we are at 31%. The evangelical population of Brazil, according to a recent poll because we didn't have a census in 2020. So in the 2010 census, we were in the mid-20s, in the evangelical population of Brazil. In the 2020 poll by São Paulo newspaper Folha, showed that 31% of the Brazilian population is now evangelical. That growth happened mostly at the expense of Catholicism. And the very interesting political component of that is that in the 2018 election, Bolsonaro and Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad were more or less tied in the Catholic electorate, Workers' Party candidate won among the small atheist and agnostic electorate. And the entire difference of 11 million voters in favor of Bolsonaro came from evangelicals. So I don't know if Catholics are hearing the Pope about Bolsonaro being a bad guy or not. I mean, Catholics are known for not paying a whole lot of attention to the Pope when it's convenient to them. But the bulk of the Bolsonaro support in Brazil comes from a different sector of the Christian electorate, namely the evangelicals. Bolsonaro was able to mobilize cult, in quotes, cultural banners such as opposition to gay marriage, opposition to abortion, all of these issues that have been central in U.S. American elections for some time became central in the 2018 election that led Bolsonaro to power.
So what do you think? Is Bolsonaro shamed and on the way out and better times in sight for Brazil? Or is just an ongoing series of indications that Brazil is in deep trouble?
Brazil is in deep trouble regardless of what happens in next year's election. Right. That is one point that I've been consistently making in Brazilian media and Brazilian on the Brazilian internet, because we have a tendency, I think, as a country to wait for a savior, right? Basically to, it's called Sebastianism, and it comes from the Portuguese King Sebastian, who fought the religious wars in Northern Africa and so forth. And it was supposed to return at some point. We tend to be a very messianic country.
Sebastianism,
yeah. Nice. It is, it's an Iberian, way of thinking, right? That basically deposits upon the figure of the political savior some sort of supernatural power. That was reinforced by the Lula political coalition, and that was tapped into by the Bolsonaro coalition. At this point, Bolsonaro is weakened because his strategy, as it was very well demonstrated by studies conducted by São Paulo professor Daisy Ventura, she demonstrated that it was not that the government was incompetent. It was deliberate. It was deliberate because from the beginning of the pandemic, the project was to achieve herd immunity through contagion, to kill as many people as possible so that the virus would go away in time for the elections. Of course, the calculation was ridiculous and completely anti-scientific, not to mention cruel and unconscionable. But that was deliberate. It was an explicit project of contaminating as many people as possible so that you would eventually achieve herd immunity that way. So Bolsonaro promoted gatherings of multitudes at the beginning of the pandemic. He repeatedly made false statements about how the virus was transmitted. He repeatedly championed medicines that were not effective against COVID. As we know, there's no medicine against COVID. He repeatedly gathered his supporters in protest against the Supreme Court, in protests against Congress. He repeatedly threatened the very existence of next year's elections in a context where the pandemic was raving throughout Brazil. Brazilians were dying at the rate of 4,000 a day. And his project was to achieve herd immunity in time for the economy to recover in 2022. And that was the calculation. He could then win the elections. It backfired on him. his popularity has plummeted, but he still has a very loud and very active core of supporters that at this point hovers around 25% of the country. So he has 1/4 of the country. He's not dead by any stretch of the imagination. And the far right movement that he leads is not going away anytime soon. Just like here in the United States, the movement led by Donald Trump is not going away anytime soon. If Lula wins, which today looks like the most likely possibility, he is going to take over in a situation that is completely different from the situation that he faced in 2003. At that point, the Brazilian economy was more or less in place. We were living in a period of political stability. We were not divided by these hateful polarizations. So even if, in the best case scenario, Bolsonaro loses, Lula takes power, we will still be in a situation where Brazil's in fiscal collapse. There are 15 million unemployed people. Inflation is now back in two digits. There is no money. The fiscal hole is immense. And he now counts on the active hatred of at least 1/3 of the country. So it doesn't look good, even in the best case scenario.
Nothing looks good. We will, I'm afraid, be talking again. But a linguistic point. I Googled hello in Portuguese and it told me olá. And thus I greeted you, olá. But now I am informed that olá is only Spanish, and in Portuguese you say oi tudo bem.
Oi tudo bem. Olá is fine. Olá is fine as well. Yeah, oi tudo bem is the most common form, but olá is fine too. It's widely used.
All right. And how do I say thank you in Portuguese?
Obrigado.
Obrigado.
De nada. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Kim.
Thank you. That was Professor Idelbar Avila, who's based at Tulane University in New Orleans.